Welcome to the FemNation podcast, where we wholeheartedly believe women entrepreneurs can rise together. Success comes in many flavors. There are no secret strategies. Women entrepreneurs are rewriting history by defining success on their own terms. Hi, I'm White of Gannon, the down-to-earth chick with a different name. Entrepreneur and founder of the Female Entrepreneur Movement, our business is dedicated to helping women start and grow their businesses, increasing financial independence. Each week, join me for inspiring stories and powerful interviews of women entrepreneurs sharing their lessons to success to help you take your business to the next level. Now, let's go for it. Welcome back to the FemNation podcast. Today we have guest Chloe Burrows. She is a study skills trainer for non-traditional students. And I love the fact that you say non-traditional in there because that's intriguing to me. And I'm sure we'll get to learn more about that. Thank you for coming on today, Chloe.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So let's start with the question of the hour. Where did your entrepreneurial journey start?
So I kind of always had this idea that I might want to work for myself, but I started working in corporate and didn't really see how I could own my own business. But I decided to go back to university at the same time as working. So I got my business degree at the same time. And because I did well from it and I started teaching other people kind of just for free, just sharing my knowledge, I then thought, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe this is how I can become an entrepreneur. So I did it as a side hustle for a few years, and it's almost a year today, actually, that I quit my full-time job to become a full-time entrepreneur. So now I coach non-traditional students. So that's anyone who is a mature student, who is studying online or at a distance, or who's combining kind of university or college study with working or with raising a family. So it's how to help those people be successful.
Excellent. I was going to ask you to explain that and you walked right into it for me. So I appreciate you saying that. That's very nice because myself being a college attending in my later adult years, well, not later, but mid-30s is when I went to college and I had a family and I was had a little bit of a side business that, you know, was still bringing in some income. This is some 8 years ago now at this point, but I understand that that was a completely different struggle. So I'm glad to know there's somebody out there that's doing that. Let me ask you a question though. When you decided that maybe this was going to be where you could be an entrepreneur, or this is going to be where your entrepreneurial journey started, what came up around that, that, you know, maybe was needed to be overcome as far as you stepping into that space or you having imposter syndrome or saying, but maybe it isn't, you know, what was around that?
I knew that I'd kind of done the work myself. So I knew that I taught myself how to study and that I was my own success story. But I wasn't that, where I kind of had the imposter syndrome is, okay, but what about when a student comes to me and I just can't help them? And what if my success was a fluke and it was just luck or kind of anything like that? I kind of had that, okay, I help myself, but does that mean I can help anyone? And it took me like probably up until when I quit my job full time, like to work on this full time. So it probably took me 2 years of business before I actually felt confident enough to call myself an expert. Mm-hmm. Like before then, I was always kind of like referring to myself as, oh, I'm the person that's in the trenches with you. And as I'm learning, I'll teach you. And it took me a long time to actually step up and say, no, I am the expert and I have something to offer.
What do you feel was that shift? What created that shift for you?
I think it was kind of a knock-on effect of a few different things. So I actually had a publisher come to me and say, look, we've been following you online for a while. We think there's a gap in the market for a study skills book, specifically for non-traditional students. And we want you to write it. And I got this email when I was at work and I just thought, holy moly, like they actually want me. They are talking to me as if I'm an expert. Like I must be an expert because they wouldn't come to me otherwise. And then it was just kind of working with a few clients and getting good results and asking to do some workshops. And I think it was a few things that I needed evidence for I kind of had that belief in myself, I think.
What is one quality that you feel like you possessed in order to help you step forward towards that before you felt like you're an expert, before you felt like, you know, you really had this and everybody else is viewing as such and having those statistics or those wins for your clients? What helped you move forward consistently?
So, one of the skills that I learned while I was studying was all around the idea of growth mindset, that, you know, our possibility is limitless as long as we keep trying, use the right strategies, put the effort in. And so that skill that I developed throughout my studies kind of helped me in my kind of business, because I thought, okay, anytime something didn't work, so I would launch something and no one cared, or I would kind of go after something, like pitch myself for something and it didn't happen. I kind of just thought, okay, what can I learn from this? And so trying to not be scared off by making mistakes and not be scared off by disappointment, which was something I had to learn through studying. You know, every time I got a grade I wasn't happy with, I could have just given up or accepted that as my, you know, this is the grade I'm going to get. Instead, it was like, okay, what can I learn from this situation? How can I move forward? So I think that resilience and belief that it will happen, it might just take me kind of a more bumpy road to get there, I think that really helped.
But be willing to accept the bumpy road, however, that let the road be itself and not try to make the road.
Exactly. And I had this realization kind of a year or so ago that I'm in this for the long game. You know, you kind of see all these case studies and stories of all these entrepreneurs who are making millions so quickly. And I just thought, okay, I want to get to that point, but I've got, you know, 30, 40 plus more years of working. Like, I don't have to get there right now. Mm-hmm. And so I think accepting I'm in this for the long game, I'm not in this to build a company and then sell it and do something else. This is what I want to do. So what happens, you know, why can't I just take it a bit slower and give myself longer to get there and stop putting that expectation that I have to have success immediately?
So I'm on a kind of a kick to redefine what a lifestyle business is. Would you consider that that's a lifestyle business for you then, with not the traditional thought around a beach and a bikini and a fruity drink?
Yeah, I like the idea of going on those kind of holidays.
Sure, sure.
That's not what I want for my life. Like, I'm really happy with my life as it is, like being close to family and friends. And the thing I just want is, I want to work for myself. And to me, that's the lifestyle business. Yes. That I'm not commuting. You know, anytime I have to drive where there's traffic, it drives me insane now. And so, like, not having to wake up when someone else tells me to, and like, that's what I see as a lifestyle business, not that I can just pick up my laptop and go wherever I want to in the world.
Yeah, I think we need to take back that term as entrepreneurs and reframe it to something that is much more achievable to what we view as being a lifestyle instead of what's being projected on us. How do you define success?
Okay. I think success to me is doing work that I enjoy, that kind of doesn't take something out of me. So doesn't leave me completely exhausted, doesn't leave me more stressed or more kind of doubting myself. It builds me up. So it makes me, you know, as I'm doing my work, whatever that is, I'm becoming more confident. I'm a happier person. I think that's the kind of success that I want, the one that's building me up, rather than success of kind of typical corporate success of you earn more money, you have less and less of a life, you're more stressed, you're more attached to the job. I don't want that. Mm-hmm.
So your success would probably roll right in with that lifestyle decision of how you want to move through the rest of your world.
Yeah. And I think then your kind of how your life looks can vary then, because there'll be times in my life when I may want to be a bit busier and take on more projects and kind of be a bit more ambitious. And then there might be times as well that I want to pull back and spend more time with my family. For example, my sister's just had her second baby and she lives really close to me. And actually I want to spend more time with her and my new nephew. And I think that's something that you can't do in a corporate role.
Right. Let me ask you about your clients. Are you, or have you gotten to a point where you can identify if a client is just not a fit for you?
So I am getting to that point. I've actually had a few times recently where I've had to turn people away, which I think is common in when most people start their businesses, that they feel like anyone who's willing to give them money, they have to accept. But I've worked with a few people before, and now I kind of get this sense of, okay, they're not going to do the work. So people come to me because their grades aren't very high and they want me to help them. And I give them an action plan and I tell them how we can do it. And they just, they're not willing to do the work. They just want to make excuses. They want to blame other people. And it doesn't matter how much support you give, you kind of, even that's not enough. So the people who come to me who are seriously motivated, they have a goal of, this is why I'm doing my degree. I just need you to help me get there. Like they're the ones who are willing to do the work, whereas other people just want you to do the work for them.
Right, which is counterproductive.
Yeah,
and even, you do.
And even if you do kind of, I've had a client before where I've accepted that role a bit more, and I've probably helped them out kind of too much in that I've taken over, you know, all of their kind of having to think for themselves. And it doesn't really work out for them either. So right. I think like bringing on clients that you know can be independent, and that one day you give them the skills and then they can go off and do it by themselves rather than constantly having to lean on you.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent advice too, because that's something I believe early entrepreneurs struggle with, taking on all the clients. And that works against us as entrepreneurs in general, because then we don't get the successes and the wins for the clients as easily, but it's not because of what we're offering or what you have to for your clients. It's because the clients aren't willing to do the work. They've got to be willing to do the work. That's where the growth happens.
And if they're not at the right stage, or sometimes there are people who they need a certain level of support from me, but they just don't have the money. Like they just can't invest. Mm-hmm. And there have like been a few times where I've kind of like out of kind of my judgment, better judgment, I've then lowered my prices to try and help them. And even then, it just hasn't come from the right place and it's just not really worked out. So I think noticing when you can't help someone and just trying to give them another solution, trying to put them, you know, send them someone else's way and just stick in your zone where you can have the best transformation, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that brings up a thought for me. Bartering is very much in that same space. Because early on when I, about 5 years ago, when I first started my accounting practice, which I'm not in at this point, but there was a lot of people that would say, hey, I'll trade services. And at the time it sounded good. But the problem is one, there needs to be an accountability of tracking of some sort. I mean, for US tax laws predominantly, but secondarily, if it's not a dollar for dollar trade, then it gets kind of skewed. And the tendency is to start wondering who's getting the better end of the deal now, you know, so that those are the surface level issues. But what I found in bartering is that it's not, the service is not taken seriously either way.
Yeah.
Because there's really no skin in the game. And recently I had someone ask me, and she actually is a client of mine. She figured out what was going to work for her, but she asked me initially, because if you don't ask, you don't receive. Right. And so I don't mind being asked, but she asked if I would be willing to trade. And I said, no, here's why. Not because I don't want to, but because I have had people trade and then not do the work because they don't value the fact that they didn't put any skin in the game with money. And yeah. So that's the same thing with lowering prices. That's what happens. You feel compelled to help them because you want so badly from the nurturing side of you to help them achieve those results, because you know that they so could, but maybe mm-hmm. this is just a little cog that's in the way, when it's really yes, but it creates a different roadblock that they just don't value the service the same. They just
exactly. Don't. Whenever I do promotions on emails, I will get emails from people saying, I can't afford this. Can you offer it for free or can you cut it in half? And right. I never knew what to say to them or how to phrase it. But something that Ramit Sethi said once is he said that he goes back to those people and he says, I will give you this course for free if you do these 5 steps first. Come back to me on Monday with your homework. And if you do it and you take action, then I'll give you the course for free. And I think the last I heard of it, he's never had to give it for free because no one has ever come back to him with the homework.
Right. And it speaks for itself. I mean, it's just having done it myself and then you having experienced even lowering your prices, it sits all in the same bucket. That it just is not valued the same way. And so I discourage people from doing trades. When I have clients I work with and they're doing trades, I said, you need to phase those out. Yeah. Do the best you have possible, but then phase those out because it's just not respected the same way.
Exactly. And you get a different level of clientele, I think. Like the people who, as soon as they hear the price, they don't even flinch. They just go, okay, yep, how can I pay? Those are very different from the people that I have lots and lots of conversations with around kind of how much it costs and have you got any discounts? And I think it's just a different level, really. Mm-hmm. And also I think people use that excuse, don't they, quite often of, I don't have the money. And yes, in some cases they don't. But recently I had someone come to me who wanted me to proofread one of her essays. And I said, okay, yeah, I normally recommend that we do it twice. Here's the cost for 2 reviews. Comes back saying, I literally haven't got any money. I've only got the money for 1 review. Okay, fine. Let her do it. As soon as I sent it back, she then comes back and says, can you give me the invoice for the 2nd review? I really want you to look it over again. And I felt like saying, oh, did you win the lottery in the last an hour? Because suddenly she valued it more and she was willing to pay more. And so now if anyone ever tells me they don't have the money, if I, you know, I go down the route of, okay, could I help with a payment plan? But if that's not the case, then I'm just like, okay, that's fine. Here's my free resources. Off you go. Good luck.
Absolutely. And setting that boundary and standing that ground, it also confirms your expertise because you know, then, you know, they don't understand and they don't realize that by doing that, subconsciously in their own mind, they are discrediting and devaluing your expertise to a degree. But like you just said in the example, all of a sudden she came up with the other amount. I mean, most of the time, and I agree, there are cases where they don't have the money. People don't have the money. But most of the time, they do. It's just a choice of where they want to spend their money. The pain isn't big enough for them until later on down the road.
Yeah.
All right, I want to ask you about your book. Tell me about more your book and what you are teaching in that. What's the point?
So the book is called The Return to Study Handbook, and it's meant as a kind of introduction to all of the main study skills that a non-traditional student would need. So someone who they've decided to go to university or college, they realize they have no idea what they're doing. It's been years or decades since they've last studied and they kind of lack the confidence. So this book gives them kind of an overview of motivation, productivity, organization, how to take notes, how to write essays, how to revise for exams, how to kind of build up your confidence so that they can kind of dive in anytime they need it throughout their degree just to learn some new strategies and get some advice.
Where were you able to get the... What hands were you able to put this book into? How is it offered at colleges? Did you find a way that it was beneficial in the bookstores there? Do you offer it online? How do you get it into the hands of the students that need it?
So it's traditionally published. So a lot of the kind of legwork, I guess, of getting it into the hands of students is done kind of for me. It is sold in stores and it is sold online kind of all over the world. Kind of, I guess, on Amazon, but the aim is to get it translated into other languages as well. So it was published last month. And then my goal for the kind of the rest of this year and into next year is to actually partner with universities and colleges to get them to offer the book, but also to partner with kind of corporate companies who they are putting their employees through additional learning or paying for them to do qualifications, and they want to support their employees as well, because there aren't kind of any or many books at all that are specifically for non-traditional learners. So there's a lot of books out there for normal, you know, 18-year-old college students, but this, you know, people have different challenges when they're a little bit older and they've got like a mortgage to pay for and a work to kind of juggle around their studying. So I wanted to be like the go-to guide for those people.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. How big is the book? Is it overwhelming? How do the students resonate with it?
The feedback I've had so far is really good, saying that it's kind of bite size. The good thing about having an editor work with me is that they've stopped me waffling. And I've tried to make it not, so it's nowhere near the size of a textbook. It's like 65,000 words. So kind of like a normal like novel size. And it's more conversational. So I've put my story into it, some of the stories of like clients, the students I've worked with, and it's more kind of jump in, you know, read a few pages to get an idea of a new strategy and go. So it's super bite-sized because I know that these people are super busy and they've already got massive textbooks to read. They don't want another one.
Right. Right. And that's why I was asking them, like, I know that they're already working on a lot of textbook stuff. So that's excellent. Yeah. And being conversational is probably refreshing since the textbooks are dry.
Yeah,
sorry to all the textbook people.
They are. And that was a lot of the, when I was kind of looking at competitor books, that's what I was finding. Some of them were mammoth and took so long to get to the point when someone just has a problem that's staring them in the face. They just want to know something they can try and then they want to get on with their studying.
Mm-hmm. What was the most vulnerable struggle you overcome?
With writing the book or just in
general? With writing book. Yes, with writing the book.
Okay. I found it took me a long time to get started, for sure. I think I put a lot of pressure on myself to be an amazing writer because, you know, I'm supposed, like, I kind of tout myself as an expert in how to write essays and I help people write their own essays and I help people be productive. And then suddenly I had this book to write and these deadlines and I kind of faffed about for months because I just felt so much pressure to do it in the best way and to be able to knock out 10,000 words a day or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think it took me a while to just it kind of get over that ego thing of just, this is new for me. Like I can go at my own pace. And if each day is a bit of a struggle, then that's okay because I'm learning how to write a book.
How did that parallel your entrepreneurial journey?
Probably quite similar, actually. starting a business, just no one tells you exactly how much you have to learn. And especially when I'm still a solopreneur, like how many pieces of tech you have to learn, like is just kind of insane. And I would like to think I have a fairly simple business. And so I wasn't really ready for the learning curve. And even now, there are times when I just wish that someone else could just make the decisions for me and someone else could just kind of take responsibility for a bit. And like sometimes I think maybe it would be nice to have a boss come in and just tell me what to do. So I think there's always been that struggle of, no, okay, I'm the boss now. Okay, it's my time to work this out and not feel like I'm kind of doing it wrong just because it's a struggle. Like it just means that I'm learning something new.
Mm-hmm. What's the future of your business look like? Are you wanting to grow it? What does that look like?
So I want it to be big. I want it to be that anyone who decides to go back to education at a later stage in life, they know my name and they know that I'm the person to work with. So my kind of aim is I already have students from all over the world just because in my head I was like, I'm going to work with people in the UK, but people find you on the internet and I work with students from everywhere. So I want to kind of keep growing, but also work with corporates and universities to try and kind of help them teach their students a bit better. Because really, the only reason these students need me is because they've been failed by the school system.
There's a gap.
Yeah. So I'm kind of starting on the front lines first. And then the aim is to actually change it in universities themselves so that they almost don't need me in the front lines. They're already being taught how to study because I just find it insane that you're expected to just know all of this stuff immediately, and not supposed to struggle at all. And a lot of people, they go to university and they maybe were like highest in their class at school, and then suddenly they're at university and there's hundreds of students who are at the same level as them. And how do they cope with that? So the aim is to kind of go big and go and kind of change the university's policies.
Is that the impact you want to make?
Yeah. I want it to be that anyone who wants to go to university, who wants to further themselves and further their education, can. Because at the moment, I talk to so many people who they just brush it off as, oh, I'm not that person. I'm not good enough for university. And that's how I used to feel. Mm-hmm. So I don't want that to be something that stops someone. I don't want people to think that those are permanent blockers that cannot be removed, that if you don't feel like you're very academic, if you don't feel like you're very confident or that you have any study strategies, I don't want those to ever be problems that stop you even going for it. Like, I want people to have that knowledge that it is possible for them with the right support.
What is one thing you know now that you wish you knew when you started as an entrepreneur?
I think that the entrepreneurial roller coaster is a thing that isn't really possible to get away from. So any day, I will have moments where I feel like I am just an amazing entrepreneur and things are going well and I'm at the top of my game and I'm going to have this like the most amazing year. And then almost 5 minutes later, I can think that everything's going completely wrong. And then literally the next minute, I'm like strutting downstairs thinking everything's right again. And it's just kind of insane, this roller coaster. But actually learning to accept the roller coaster has definitely been helpful, rather than seeing it as kind of like one of them's bad and that I should either set my sights lower or that I'm obviously not cut out for this if I feel low often, and actually just accept that that's going to happen, and then hopefully kind of make the low points not so low.
Or just learn how to pass through them.
Yeah, exactly. Learn how to not sit in them. Mm-hmm. So just this idea of, you know, we're going to fall over. We're going to like fall in a hole sometimes, but not to sit in the hole, but to actually get up and figure out how to get out of it. I think that's definitely something I've learned.
How has the entrepreneurial journey changed you as a person?
I think it's made me a lot more confident to kind of share my opinion on things. Mm-hmm. I think I worked in kind of corporate for kind of 5-6 years, and you're put in a box of, this is what you are trained to do, and you don't kind of have any impact on anything else. You shouldn't have an opinion about anything else. And I felt like I was using like 1% of my skills. So then to kind of own my own business where I get to talk about what I want, I get to share with my audience whatever I want, whatever my opinions are, there are people they want to know about them. Mm-hmm. And so I find that even in kind of non-work life, when I'm around friends or family or meeting new people, if I have something to say, I'm not afraid to say it anymore because I know that I have something to offer, like I have something to bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. So it's been a confidence builder?
Definitely, yeah.
That's amazing.
Just to know that there are, like I used to kind of be at work and just be in meetings and my job was to take minutes and not say anything. And then I would go home that evening and then I would be doing a webinar for 100 students who've logged in from all over the world to learn from me. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a lot more of a confident place to be in a role that I've created where I'm using all of my skills.
Mm-hmm. So then, I mean, basically, and I only pause because I'm trying to put my words into context on this, but you found in being an entrepreneur that the world does want to hear from you and needs to hear from you. Yeah. Where you had been silenced in the corporate side.
Definitely. I think we all have a lot more than we can bring to a corporate role. Unless, even if you're the CEO of a company, you have a role to play and there are certain things that you don't kind of meddle in. Whereas I like the idea that as an entrepreneur, you can design this business that uses all of your skills And especially as I'm kind of looking next year to grow my team, that I can spend even more time in that zone of genius and actually then outsource the stuff I'm maybe not so good at. So even more of a confidence booster.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. I think all entrepreneurs, this is a great episode because all entrepreneurs need to realize, I think, as you said, this is a very big hurdle for most entrepreneurs to realize the world actually does want to hear from you and needs to. We need to utilize our voices, but we've been pushed back to keep it quiet for quite some time. But if they're listening, just go say it. Go exactly. Be it. Go do it. Thank you so much for coming on today. How can the listeners connect with you? Where can they find you?
So my kind of hangout is on Instagram. So you can find me at chloe.burrows, and my website is chloeburrows.com. And if you go on there, you can find details on kind of recent blog posts, or you can find a link to check out my book if you are interested in buying that.
Awesome. Again, I want to thank you for coming on today and stepping into the podcast world. This has been a very eye-opening episode for the listeners.
Thanks for having me on. It's been great.
Guys, as she mentioned, please check out her links and reach out and have a conversation and see what that looks like. And especially if you're in the world of going back to college or in college and you need to know what that looks like, please, please, please utilize those resources to find out how you can better your educational journey and take tips from her entrepreneurial journey. So thank you so much, Chloe. Guys, as always, keep moving forward.
Thanks for listening to the Fem Nation podcast. Be sure to check out our show notes for more details from the episode. If you love the show, share it with a friend or drop me a note. I'd love to hear from you over at whitedovegannon.com or find me on social media. Until next time, keep moving forward.